Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. Voice of the Cape, Drive Time 91.3. Before we cross to our desk, where we talk about Trump security advisor Michael Flynn resigning after less than 3 weeks in the job due to talking to the Russians before he was appointed. But what we've got here, before we go into that, is Donald Trump's senior policy advisor, Stephen Miller, appearing on four major U.S. shows in the space of a few hours to confirm that President Trump will continue to fight the courts over his controversial travel ban. Miller said these options included seeking an emergency stay at the Supreme Court to suspend the block on the ban, continuing the appeal with a panel, having an emergency hearing, or going to the trial court at district level, as well as drafting a fresh order. This interview, courtesy of the NBC, might actually shock you.
Do you feel like you and your staff there that you're in control of events at the White House?
I think to say that we're in control would be a substantial understatement. We have equal branches of government in this country. The judiciary is not supreme. There's no such thing as judicial supremacy. Mm-hmm. What the judges did, both at the ninth and at the district level, was to take power for themselves that belonged squarely in the hands of the President of the United States.
Stephen, the three judges say you're flat wrong.
No, the three judges made a broad, overreaching statement. This is an ideological disagreement between those who believe we should have borders and should have controls, and those who believe there should be no borders and no controls. This is a judicial usurpation of power. The end result of this, though, is that our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see, as we begin to take further actions, that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned. And the bottom line is the president's powers in this area represent the apex of executive authority. We will have unquestioned military strength beyond anything anybody can imagine. We have a president who has done more in 3 weeks than most presidents have done in an entire administration, saying that we stand with our ally, having the two men appear on camera worldwide to all of planet Earth, was a statement that will be understood very well by North Korea. I'm not going to make a comment on that. I don't have any information on it. I do want to say that Sean Spicer, as always, is 100% correct, and that what he said is true and important, and I agree with it.
So then you are making a comment on it.
I'm not going to make any new comment. It is a fact, and you will not deny it, that there are massive numbers of non-citizens in this country who are registered to vote. That is a scandal. We should stop the presses. That's the story we should be talking about. And I'm prepared to go on any show, anywhere, anytime, and repeat it and say the President of the United States is correct 100%.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape, Drive Time, and that a sound bite or collection of sound bites, courtesy NBC, leads us into what we're going to be discussing this afternoon, chiefly, that Michael Flynn has resigned as National Security Advisor of the U.S. over his contact with Russian officials before President Donald Trump took office. His resignation followed reports that the Department of Justice warned Trump about his compromised position. We joined online by Brooke Spector, a former U.S. diplomat in Africa and Asia, and of course, right now, an editor at the Daily Maverick. Brooke Spector, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon. Good to be with you again.
We've had quite a cocktail before the show. Just very quickly, Stephen Miller making some statements. I fell out of my seat when I heard them. The judiciary is not supreme. Absolutism at its best. Judicial usurpation of power. And the real cherry, our opponents, the media.
Well, I don't know. Stephen Miller is a 31-year-old ideologue from Southern California who's been exalted to his current post as a advisor to the president. Quite honestly, hush my mouth and all that, but I think it's all gone to his head. He said things not just in those clips you've aired, but in various other things that demonstrably have no visible connection to the facts that the rest of the world operates with. And in the clips that you did air, have very little connection to American history, politics, society as we know. The idea that, as he said on one talk show the other day, that the president's position dealing with international relations generally is unreviewable by the courts simply is not true. It's not true in the record of precedents in the Supreme Court. It's not true in history. And it's not true in recent times. I mean, it's, yes, of course, the Constitution gives the president authority, primary authority, in foreign affairs. You can't run foreign affairs by a committee of 436 people. That doesn't work. On the other hand, no act by the chief executive or his subordinates is unreviewable by the courts, and that's been settled doctrine since 1819, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I was fairly gobsmacked when I heard this young man talking. I had to actually pinch myself because, as I say, he seemed to violate, as you've just said, everything that I've ever understood about the United States. I'm not an expert, but I like to think that I have a little understanding of what's happening in the country.
Well, you have enough to understand that he was way, way off base. I mean, it's his job to put the best face on things, yes, but it's also his job to put the best face on things consistent with the historical record and established judicial precedents. And he's been wrong since the precept of judicial review was first established way back at the beginning of the 19th century. It wasn't explicitly written in the Constitution, but it was implied and then made explicit in one Supreme Court decision, and even in foreign affairs in 1952, I believe, there was a Supreme Court case in which the president's writ was not accorded to be totally without any control in international affairs either. So, I mean, we're not talking about a question which is up for grabs. We're talking about a question which is settled in American law and jurisprudence.
Yeah, I mean, just to, you know, sort of just to put a cap on it, I mean, the United States is a constitutional state, isn't it? It actually has governing principles.
It's a constitutional state as opposed to a parliamentary state. Britain's a parliamentary state where the parliament is supreme. Parliament passes a law that says X, Y, and Z are true. They're true regardless of what other people may believe. You pass a law in the U.S. that says X, Y, and Z are true, and it's found to be inconsistent with constitutional principles or legal precedents, then it's not true.
Indeed. Brooks, let's get along to the other big story is that National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, appointed again, against warnings by Department of Justice, now finds himself out of a job after 18 days.
Yeah, well, that's something of a record.
Right, okay.
You know, I've been looking to see if I can find anybody else who was bounced quite as quickly. And the nearest I can come up with is way back in 1982, Richard V. Allen, who was National Security Advisor for Ronald Reagan. And Richard Allen had worked in the White House previously, and he got caught out. How did it go? He was asked to arrange interviews for a Japanese magazine and a newspaper with Nancy Reagan, and in the process of doing it, they did what apparently was their standard practice, that particular paper, giving money and giving some gifts. Now, he put the stuff in a safe and promptly forgot about it, he says, and it was discovered a little while later after the interviews, then he sort of went, well, yeah, okay, maybe sort of, and he never cashed the money, but it was enough to destroy his credibility within the administration, and he resigned, but it took a year plus, actually. So Mike Flynn has set the open field record on this one, apparently. Review what happened in very brief terms. In the interregnum between the time when Donald Trump was elected and the time he was inaugurated, when they were setting up their transition to become the new administration. Flynn continued to have conversations with the Russian ambassador to the United States. And in the course of those conversations, the idea that, hang on, we're the new sheriff in town, and we'll deal with those economic sanctions the Obama administration has put into place. So just bear with us for a bit. Now, aside from the fact that it's a violation of the little remembered Logan Act, it was also a startling violation of the standard practice of transition teams to set out on their own to begin to engage in negotiations with foreign governments. It's been known to happen, but it's real rare. But then the crushing problem, of course, was he told the new vice president and a bunch of White House colleagues that, no, one of the things they definitely didn't talk about was sanctions, and it was all just pleasantries and best on the festive season and, you know, congratulations and we love you all. Well, it turned out, of course, not to be the case, and it put Mike Pence out on his own saying it never happened. He put all the other advisors out saying it never happened. It put at least one of them out there alone saying the president has full faith and credit in Mike Flynn, just as the investigations had been brought to the attention of other parts of the White House team that all this had happened. And why they knew, of course, is that the conversations by phone that emanate to and from the Russian embassy in Washington, they're pretty routinely listened to because, you know, that's what people do. The ones in Moscow for the U.S. embassy have been pretty much listened to routinely as well. Everybody knows the game, and everybody pays attention to it, and everybody's pretty careful. But when you're confronted by the evidence that he had, and you're confronted by the fact that he told everybody he hadn't, and all those people went out and said, no, he didn't, and now they have to go, ooh, yeah, well, maybe he did, you kind of lose your standing in the White House after that set of sloppinesses have taken place.
Absolutely, and I'm trying to understand how somebody moving in those circles doesn't understand the diplomatic game, that when you talk to diplomats, you specify that it's off the record, and you make damn sure you're not talking to any recording devices. I'm being a bit spy versus spy here. Or you just shut your mouth and you go through the pleasantries.
And in this case, because he wasn't even in the job yet, you only talk pleasantries. And, you know, let's be clear. This is not the first time he's managed to be bounced from a position. He was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency under Barack Obama until he was pushed out because of his wild and crazy management style. And in the intervening years, he took on an increasingly Islamophobic mantle, deciding effectively that was the supreme test of Western civilization, and that was the primal challenge to Western civilization. And you have to wonder just exactly what else he thought was important in the world. But as a result, I mean, his ineptitude in the quote-unquote secret and surveilled world, his obvious problems in keeping his colleagues informed, and his management style have all conspired to do him in. The thing that it does, of course, is it drives a nail right through the heart of the story that the Trump administration is going to be supremely well managed by really well organized people who really know what they're doing and who will bring a breath of fresh air as they drain that Washington swamp. What instead it says is, well, we have a bunch of people running around not being honest with each other, doing what they think they want to do, and nobody's in charge.
Yeah, indeed. It certainly is a very interesting landscape. What do you make of the Trump presidency so far? It seems like he's beginning to realize, number one, that the U.S. is a constitutional state and not a company that he can run. And number two, that turning the ship USA around isn't so easy. You have to go through due process.
Well, even beyond that, it's a complicated place. It's big, it's complicated. There are all kinds of competing interests, both within government and without. and they have alliances across the various divides between government agencies, and interest groups reach across, and interest groups are in conflict with various parts of the government and among themselves. And you can't simply run it by fiat. You can't simply say you're fired. You can't simply say do it or else. And it reminds me once again of the classic story of Harry Truman, who was the president from 1945 to 1953. And he was replaced by Dwight Eisenhower, of course, had been a career army officer, general, and then supreme Allied commander in Europe during World War II, the Normandy invasion and the liberation of France and the conquest of Germany. And on the day that Truman was about to leave office, he turned to one of his aides and said, astonishingly, poor Ike, Eisenhower, poor Ike, he'll sit here and he'll say, do this, do that, and absolutely nothing will happen.
It's a reality check, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, and the Trump administration may well rebound from this, or they may not. They may discover that everything is more complicated than they thought. Everything is harder. And the thing we have left out of our discussion so far, of course, is crucial. There's a Congress to be dealt with.
Absolutely.
It's in control of the Republican Party, but that's very different than saying it's in the control of Donald Trump. Because, as you know, the Congress, both Senate and the House, they run things among themselves as if they are in a close but loose alliance with the sitting president. They're not under his thumb as you would have it in a parliamentary system, say, where you just tell the members of the parliament of your party, vote this way, and they obediently go vote that way. And the Republican Party itself is divided between what I call budget hawks, people who want to cut the budget, people who want to engage in a variety of social conservative efforts, people who want to cut taxes, people who want to engage, at least in a few cases still, an active internationalist, what sometimes is called pejoratively neoconservative foreign policy, as well as those people who are more isolationist and who came in with the Tea Party boom. He doesn't have a straightforward whip over that party, because there are all these different competing influences. And in the Congress, they see, among Republicans, the one thing they do agree on, that the priorities that they want to take up are rather different than the ones Donald Trump seems to be taking.
Brooke, a final comment. Would you agree that if we want to summarize what we're talking about and summarize U.S. politics and the way the system works, it's complicated?
It's harder than you think it is, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not, you know, you're no longer a country of one person where you can just tell people do this or I won't pay you, now go away. You have to actually convince people. And as Richard Neustadter, a scholar of the presidency, famously wrote 50 years ago, he said, ultimately, the power of the presidency is the power to persuade. The power to persuade as opposed to the power to order.
I think they call it soft power.
Well, in domestic terms, you have the tools, but you can't just order the army in to take over the Capitol.
Right, obviously not. Brooke Spector, former U.S. diplomat, and of course, editor the Daily Maverick. In fact, he's got some pieces up on the website, if you visit the Daily Maverick, where he comments about the state of the U.S. under Trump. But Brooke Spector, as always, a great pleasure chatting to you.
No, my pleasure. And tomorrow, I have to write about the defenestration of Michael Flynn. I don't know what I'm going to say yet.
Right, but whatever you say, Brooke, we look forward to it, and a lot of Voice of the Cape listeners are going to be clicking on that mouse to see what you have written. Thanks a lot.
You too.